period, end of sentence, won an Oscar in 2019. Now there is a book with the same name, which outlines the challenges facing those who menstruate worldwide and the solutions championed by a new generation of body positive activists, innovators, and public figures, including interviews from people on the front lines, parents, teachers, medical professionals, and social justice warriors. Period, end of sentence, illuminates the many ways that menstrual injustice can limit opportunities, erode self-esteem, and even threaten lives. Journalist Anita Diamond is the author of the new book. She joins us this morning. Anita, thank you very much. Am I saying your last name correctly, even though I know you've been on this program at least twice?
Yes, you're saying it correctly.
Okay,
thanks for
excellent.
Having me this morning.
It's wonderful to have you back. I thank you very much for being here. Give us a sense of how you, so the movie wins the Oscar, and then you become involved how?
Well, I was watching the Oscars, and I saw them win, and I was really, I jumped off the couch and applauded, and thought it was really spectacular. And then I watched the movie the next day on Netflix, and it's very powerful, very moving. Very straightforward as well, that describes the impact of menstrual injustice on a small village in India. And then I got a phone call from my agent asking me if I would be interested in working with, in tandem with the producers of the film to produce a book.
Yeah.
And I said, yes, this is a subject of interest to me. I've spent a lot of my career writing about women's lives, untold stories about women's lives, and talking out loud about menstruation is one of those stories.
Melissa Burton is the founder of the PAD Project and led this, was the conductor of this train for a long time. So mm-hmm. I assume that's where you begin having the conversations.
Yes. I mean, I talked to them a little bit, but the mandate of the book is to go much broader than that and to
yep.
put the PAD Project in a larger context. The PAD Project is a small nonprofit based in California that produced the film, and it has since grown by leaps and bounds because of this tremendous recognition. So I learned a lot about menstrual injustice and history and culture, and so my portfolio is to sort of map the global landscape
right.
in terms of history and in terms of activism and sort of outlining what the problem is, which is pretty complicated. I think it all stems from a certain distrust of the female body and of misogyny, to put it bluntly.
So let us begin with the definition, the working definition of how we should define menstrual injustice.
Well, I think menstrual injustice, we need to think of it in large terms. It's whatever robs people who menstruate of their dignity and their ability to live full, meaningful lives. And that ranges from everything from young people who can't go to school because they don't have menstrual products and they're too freaked out to go to school and be in terror of having an accident and being outed.
Right.
To girls who actually drop out of school because of that, and that certainly limits their opportunities for the rest of their lives. There are lots of people around the world who really begin menstruating who don't have any idea what's happening to them, and they think they're dying or they have cancer or there's something wrong with them. And then there's the fact, I think one of the foundational problems is the lack of information, accurate information about what menstruation is, that it's a healthy, normal part of the human body, and that it's not dirty and it's not awful and it doesn't need to be whispered about. And everybody needs to know that, people of all genders, and boys and girls, and everyone should be having sex ed classes at the same time. And not just sex education, I'm talking about human physiology.
Health class.
So that
yeah.
we all know what we're talking about. We have a shared language.
Why are we so bad about it? I mean, we can certainly talk about the rest of the world, and there are very extreme examples throughout the world, as the book and the movie illustrate. However, I mean, we just have problems talking about it every day, and it boggles my mind of why it is difficult.
Well, it has been sort of agreed upon off-limits topic to discuss for a very long time. I think it makes a lot of people, especially men, uncomfortable to talk about women's bodily parts that are not specifically involved in sexuality.
Yeah.
And it's been easy to make fun of. And to, like, look at the language we use. I mean, one of the most common euphemisms for periods is the curse.
Right.
And if that's the curse, that means the people who are walking around with this are cursed, and then they're dangerous to some extent, right? And women and girls have been taught this. A friend of mine recently told me that her grandmother told her that if she took a shower while she was menstruating, she would never have children. So we're not talking about the other side of the world or 500 years ago. We're talking about within the past few generations here in the United States.
Well, where does that come from?
Yeah.
Although the male equivalent, of course, is that if you masturbate, that you're going to grow
you
hair
go
on
blind,
your palms.
Right.
Yeah, or go blind, right.
Right. But, you know, I have to say men have some control over whether they masturbate or not. And if you're going to menstruate, you don't have any control over that.
No, I agree. I'm just saying we come to these weird things of what's going to happen to you if you ..
Right.
No, I wasn't trying to compare the two.
Yeah. If you follow that through, I mean, this is one of the favorite examples in the menstrual justice movement is that Viagra generally is not taxed. It doesn't have a sales tax on it, but menstrual products are taxed.
Well, that's stupid.
They have sales tax on them. So there's a sense here that what happens with the male sexual organs is normal and should be treated with respect and supported, and that what happens with women's menstrual and, you know, with a uterus should be kept quiet and is not normal in some level, right? It's other.
You write about this in the book, Period Poverty and the Tampon Tax. You say that period poverty wears many faces. Talk a little bit about that. Because menstrual products are expensive.
Go ahead.
I said because menstrual products are expensive.
They are. If you add up what it costs over the course of a month and say there are three or four people in your household who menstruate, you're talking about a lot of money. And in some states, the sales tax, which includes state tax and city tax, can be as much as 10%. That's on the high end of things. So it's expensive. So if you're on a tight budget, and we've just lived through a period of history, and we continue to with the pandemic, that people who are food insecure are extremely menstrual product insecure as well. And that means limiting your activity. It means being preoccupied. So that's part of what period poverty is about. Period poverty is much more extreme and shocking for people who have less power. So people who menstruate in prisons are in tremendous need of products that they usually have to buy, that they are not supplied, or if they are supplied, they are supplied in very inadequate amounts. And there are far too many stories from women who've been in prison about the kind of degradation faced by people who menstruate when a guard says, well, you can have an extra pad, but first you have to sexually satisfy me. So that sounds like, you know, made up and very Orange is the New Black, but there are way too many examples of this that have been documented.
Well, the other part of this, too, is that from my understanding in food pantries and because of our current, whether it be SNAP, WIC benefits, they do not qualify, it does not cover menstrual products.
Food stamps and SNAP benefits have not traditionally covered menstrual products or diapers, for that matter.
Exactly. I was going to say that, and diapers as well.
Right.
And I know, so we're affecting those in prison. We're affecting the poor. Obviously, there's a racial divide.
Mm-hmm. There is. And I also want to say that food pantries and shelters, where people are very generous in donating foodstuffs, people tend not to remember that. Period products are also there. They are, along with diapers, the most requested and least donated items. So it's something everybody can help with. So absolutely, yes. So, and women of color suffer, of course, inordinately to some extent because of the medical profession, the way the medical profession has treated, continues to treat people of color, and women of color in particular. Have been their pain and their discomfort and sometimes very serious medical conditions have been dismissed out of hand by the belief that, which I'm afraid still lingers, that Black people don't suffer the same kind of pain as white people. It continues to be an ongoing crisis in the lives of a great many people. In every single zip code. I mean, you don't have to be living in a poverty-stricken area to be walking past somebody who's concerned, worried, preoccupied about not having what they need, being in pain and not knowing where to go about it. All of this stuff happens all the time.
Well, the book is incredibly important, and it is it's fascinating, but also it's just such a great spotlight on the subject. Period. End of sentence. A new chapter in the fight for menstrual justice. Anita, I thank you very much for being with us. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you. Great to talk to you.
Be well. Thank you. Again, the name of the book is Period. End of Sentence, published by Scribner. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.